Philo Torah Zoom Shiur for Yom Revi'i, Wednesday, the 18th day of Sivan 5786, corresponding to June 3rd. June 3rd, I think, was the secular date of the beginning of the Six-Day War. Or Yom Yerushalayim, and one of those. Either the first day or the third day, whatever. Tehillim Kuf, Mizmor LeTodah, Hariu LaAdonai Kol Haaretz, Ivdu Et Adonai B'Simcha, Bo'u LeFanav Yirganu, Tu'u Ki Adonai Hu Elohim, Hu Asanu V'lo Anachnu, Amo V'Tzon Marito, Bo'u Sha'arav B'Todah, Chatzerotav B'Tehillah, Hodu Lo Baruch Hu Shemo, Ki Tov Adonai Le'Olam Chasdo, Ve'Ador V'Ador Emunato. Mark, take Kuf Kaf Aleph.
Hine lo yanu v'lo yishan, shomer Yisrael, Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha, yomam ha-shemesh lo yakecha, v'yareach v'layla, Adonai yishmor cha mikol ra, yishmor es nafshecha, Adonai yishmor tzeisecha v'olecha, me'ata v'ad olam.
Kuf Lamed, Shir Hama'alot Mima Amakim Kraticha Adonai, Adonai Shema V'Koli Tehiyena Aznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai, Im Avonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Mia Amod, Ki Imecha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivare, Ki Viti Adonai Kiveta Nafshi V'Lidvaro Hochalti, Nafshi L'Adonai Mi Shomrim LaBoker, Shomrim LaBoker, Yachel Yisrael El Adonai ki im Adonai haChesed v'arbe imo fedut v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Mark.
Mishaberach avosinu Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, v'yivareches chayalei tzeva hagana liYisrael v'esanchei kofos habitachon ha'omedim al mishmar artzinu ve'arei Eloheinu v'halochamim ba'adenu min halabanon ve'ad midbar Mitzrayim u'min hayam hagadol ad lebo ha'arava u'kol makom shehem v'yavasha v'avir v'yam. Yitein Adonai es oyevinu ha'kamim aleinu nigafim lifneihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu yishmor v'yatzil es chayalinu mikol tzara v'tzuka mikol nega mahala v'yishlach baracha v'hatzlacha b'chol ma'aseh yedeihem. Yadver Sonenu Tachtehem, the Atarim Becheser, Yeshua, Wateres Nitzachon, the Kuyam Behem Hakasu, the Adonai Elohechem, Halef, Imachem, Hilachem, Lachem, Im Oyevechem, Lohoshia Hashem, Vinoma, Amen.
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 Together, Rachinu Kol Beit Yisrael,
Hanukim
Batzara Ubashimcha,
Bein
Bayam, Bein Bayabasha, Vein Baavir, Amakom
Yerachem
Yerachem Alehem, Viotziem, Mitara, Yervacha, ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, נשכים בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן.
Amen.
אוקיי, פרשת שלח, two-thirds, it's made up of three פרקים. The first two פרקים, 78 פסוקים about חטא המרגלים and everything related to it, including the follow-up where some people said, okay, we did the wrong thing, and they tried to go, but Moshe said, don't go, and they got defeated by Amalek and stuff like that. Two-thirds of the whole Sedra, just about two-thirds, is story of the whole Meraglim fiasco. Then you have one perek of 41 psukim, which has some mitzvot, which are counted as part of Taryag, and has other mitzvot that are counted elsewhere, but they occur in Parshat Shlach also. So let me take one step back. I've said this many times, but I'm getting closer to actually quantifying it. Not yet. There are mitzvot in the Torah that are standalone. They don't have a story with them. They don't have a context. They're just a mitzvah. Lo tacharosh b'shor v'chamor yachdav. Don't plow with an ox and a donkey together. You look before it, you look after it. There is no story there. The most you could ask is how come it's next to this or follows this or precedes that. But it's a standalone mitzvah. Lo tilbash sha'atnez, tzemer ufishtim yachdav. Then there are mitzvot that I call contextual. Parshat Bo is a good example of that. Middle of the story of the night before Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Makat Bechorot coming up, Korban Pesach first. Mitzvot related to Korban Pesach, and then back to the story, and then mixed, so that you actually need Torah Shebaal Peh to say, oh, that's one of the mitzvot of the Torah, and no, that one is only for that particular Pesach in Mitzrayim. Contextual mitzvot. Then you have a phenomenon which I think is most bolate, most obvious. How would I say bolate in English? Most whatever. Something like obvious, not quite, but sticks out, sticks in your face. In Parshat Shlach and next week in Parshat Korach, and I like to call those, because I like the word, juxtapositional mitzvot. Juxtaposition is a very long word, but could actually end up on a Scrabble board and could be very valuable with a J and an X in it. Juxtapositional mitzvot are mitzvot that are presented and they seem not to have a context, but it's very hard to ignore the fact that for two-thirds of the Sedra, followed by a bunch of mitzvot, that the two-thirds of the Sedra don't influence or determine or connect to what the mitzvot are. So with that sort of introduction, we'll say that we have three mitzvot in Shlach from Taryag and a bunch more that are already counted in different places. Interesting that three mitzvot, which doesn't sound like a lot, is just about in the middle of the mitzvah list. There are 26 sedras, 26 out of 54, 26 sedras that have more mitzvot than Shlach, and 25 that have fewer, and two that have three, just like it. So it's right there in the middle, even though it's only three mitzvot. Shows you how imbalanced the mitzvot are. Now, after the 78 psukim that dealt with Cheta Hamaraglim, the first thing that the Torah tells us about is not counted here in Shlach, and that makes it even more powerful because it's spoken about at least in two different places in the Torah where it is counted among the mitzvot, and its position here is almost unnecessary, except if it has a message in the context of Chet HaMeraglim. What mitzvah am I talking about? That, listen to the language. I'll render it into English. God says through Moshe, when you will go into Eretz Yisrael. And the people probably said, oh, wow, you mean we're still going to go? You have to remember the people were devastated. The Meraglim, the 10 Meraglim that spoke against Eretz Yisrael, were struck dead in a plague immediately. 600,000 plus men from age 20 and up were decreed to die out in the Midbar in a course of the rest of 40 years. It's a little misleading when you say 40 years because it's less than 39 from this point. But if you start retroactively to the coming out of Mitzrayim, look, before Kriyat Yamsuf, We already were complaining. Why'd you take us out of Egypt to kill us here in the Midbar? So if you count all of that, you're talking 40 years. And the people were depressed. Some of the people said, we did the wrong thing by panicking. We're going. And Moshe said, too late now. Don't go. God is not with you. And the Torah says, this is part of the first two-thirds of the Parsha, that the Aron stayed back, and Moshe stayed back, and God stayed back, and the people went up to fight and were defeated by the Canaanim and the Amalekim. So you could imagine the mood of this generation, even their children and their wives. And the first thing that the Torah shows us, and I can't say for sure that Moshe told the people this at the time. I would like to think that they did, because it's a very nice message. You will be going into Eretz Yisrael. You will be there with the Mishkan. You will offer korbanot to God. In other words, he is not rejecting you. He didn't say, okay, I have no choice. I promised Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to bring you there, but don't make any korbanot. I don't want them. He doesn't say that. And when you bring korbanot, you will offer wine of libation and flour and oil offerings, nisachim and menachot, l'reach nichoach, for a pleasant fragrance for me, says God, whatever that means. Very encouraging first topic. Then, and especially, I emphasize again, that we don't count it here, we don't need it here. It's here, I guess, only for that message. And then there's something else that we could combine it with what comes after that. But that's the beginning of Perek Tetvav. It's just a bunch of psukim. And then it continues with the next topic. And the next topic is also encouraging. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'mor, daber el b'nei Yisrael, v'yomarta lehem bivoachem el ha'aretz, when you come to the land which I am bringing you to. When you eat from the produce of the ground, specifically grain, and you plant and nourish and fertilize and eventually harvest and grind the wheat into flour, and you prepare to bake bread from it, you have to take a portion as challah to be given to a kohen. Now, if you look at it by itself, challah is one of the three mitzvot in Parshat Shlach. Specifically, when you make a dough, if we have tahara, that a kohen will be allowed to eat from the challah that you give him, then the requirement is 1/24 portion of the dough. For a professional baker, it's 1/48, since he bakes in volume, the percentage is half smaller. But look what you have in both of these mitzvot. The menachot are also baked, or however else they are prepared, in the Mishkan as a holy offering. Challah is associated with plain regular bread that everybody eats. So the message of these two portions is, yes, you're going into Eretz Yisrael, and yes, you will have the Mishkan, and yes, you will have Korbanot with the Nesachim and the Menachot, and you will have mitzvot to perform with the grain that you grow and other produce that you grow. And what Chazal did to challah is something very unusual. Not unique, but it's unusual. They said that in our time, where challah is not on a d'oraita level, you still have to do it. And it applies in Chutz La'aretz also. Even though the Torah says, Bivoachem el Ha'aretz, when you come to the land, it is clearly a mitzvah hatluya ba'aretz that Chazal decreed should be observed in Chutz La'aretz. The official reason, Shelo tishtakach Torat challah miYisrael, that it should not be lost until the conditions are again able to operate fully. So it's not only one of the mitzvot, but it's a mitzvah that Chazal pushed that it should never be forgotten because of what it represents. And part of what it represents is the transition from the mun, which is the 40 minus period in the Midbar. It stops, and the new lechem that we eat, we grow, we produce, but we sanctify it. It is also holy in that we take Trumot and Masrot and avoid Kalayim and whatever else is required of us to bring bread to the table, including washing for Hamotzi and making brachot and benching afterwards. There are like 10 things, maybe more, that give a spiritual dimension to the physical act of eating bread, which is the staff of life. And that's why later in the Torah, the message is, Ki lo al halechem levado yichya ha'adam. It is not just bread that sustains people, but it's al pi Hashem, by God's command, that we survive and continue to live. Now add to this the motive that some Mefarshim attribute to the Meraglim. We're talking about the 10 guys, not Kalev and Yehoshua, but the 10 who discouraged, panicked the people from pursuing. The motive attributed to them, different from the people. The people said, and that's in the Psukim, let us choose a leader to take us back to Egypt. The Meraglim, according to this school of thought, didn't want to go back to Egypt. They wanted to stay where they were in the Midbar because they had food provided for them miraculously, water, climate control by the Ananim, clothes that grew on their back, shoes that never wore out. All they had was a Torah way of life to learn and to practice. So they didn't want to go anywhere. And the messages of challah is that true, you're not going to have the mun anymore, but there's something that's actually more, I don't know the right word for it, it's not more holy, it's not more, maybe more special. It's more special than the mun. The mun was a gift from God. When, okay, here's sort of a mashal. When a kid gets served pancakes that his mother or father make for him, that's one thing. If you have the child join you when you're making pancakes that he will eat, it's more special. And that's the mitzvot that bring bread to the table. So it's a message here. Yes, the Meraglim thought that man is the best food to have. Tell you what, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you have mitzvot to perform on your work, on your partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You didn't make the wheat, God makes the wheat. You cultivated it, you plowed, you planted, you took care of it. So it's a partnership between you and God, between us and God. And that's more special. Now, more. Then the Torah presents, this one is not as encouraging as Menachot and Nesach and Challah, but it's an important message with mitzvot that are not counted here, but they belong in the aftermath of the story of the Meraglim. You have Korban Chatat, a sin offering. The sin offerings that are discussed here come in basically two flavors. Public leadership responsibility for sin and individual responsibility for sin. So let me broaden the picture. Picture a Sanhedrin existing now or tomorrow. And one of the halachic decrees that they make is that you can use electricity on Shabbat because it's not really esh. It's not forbidden. And based on this ruling of Sanhedrin, people start turning on and off lights and do all kind of other things with electricity on Shabbat. 6 months later, the Sanhedrin issues a correction. We were mistaken. We reviewed the situation, analyzed the situation, and we hereby declare that use of electricity that we had mistakenly permitted 6 months ago is forbidden. Now, thousands of us violated Shabbat based on the Sanhedrin's mistaken ruling. Are we responsible for that violation, or is the Sanhedrin responsible? So it goes like this. For the average Jew, I was just listening to the Sanhedrin. They made this declaration. Maybe they gave reasons. Maybe they published an article about what was behind it. But we were following the decree of Sanhedrin. Sounded good. So we, the average person who violated Shabbat, bishogeg, because if you knew that it was forbidden, you wouldn't have done it. You thought it was permitted. But it wasn't. That's one of the definitions of shogeg, would have to bring a korban chatat. But we don't. The Sanhedrin leaders have to bring a korban chatat. It's a different animal. It's a bull instead of a female goat. That's not the point. The point is, it's called a par he'elam davar shel tzibur. It's a leadership korban chatat to atone on behalf of their mistake and everybody that accepted their mistake and violated Shabbat as a result. However, there are, in my hypothetical, some people among the people who knew that they were wrong because they found fault in their arguments, or they were convinced that the basis on which they permitted this, what was through imperfect knowledge of what electricity is, or whatever. They knew it was wrong, but they said, the Sanhedrin said it's okay, so they went ahead and did it. Such a person has to bring his own Korban Chatat. In other words, you can't only say we were just following orders. That's a terrible concept, as we all know. And in this case, it applies as well. And the Torah in Parshat Shlach has already discussed this elsewhere in Vayikra, but it raises the issue again of the public chatat and the private chatat. Message, think of Chet HaMeraglim. Here you have 12 leaders of the tribes of Israel. Your leader, one that you grew to respect and to honor, and he was one of the 10 who discouraged going into Israel. So it's not my fault. That's one possibility. On the other hand, didn't you hear repeatedly that this is where God promised to take you? And where's your faith in God on this issue? And didn't you hear what Kalev and Yehoshua said about going? So instead of wanting to throw rocks at them and stone them, you could have listened, you should have listened. You had peer pressure, you went along with the crowd, what do you call it, a mob mentality. So on one way of looking at it, you're also responsible. And that's the way it was, because the 10 Meraglim themselves were struck dead. 600,000 plus were not scot-free. They were told that they would die out in the course of the Midbar. So some of them died out very soon, and some a year later, because our tradition is they died on the anniversary of Chet HaMeraglim, which is Tisha B'Av, every year, and not any other time. So some lived another 30 years, 35 years. So it could have been a guy who came out of Mitzrayim at 60 and he died at age 95. Had a full life, but not in Eretz Yisrael, in the Midbar. So the positioning or the presentation of these topics of chatat, public and private, is also, doesn't say it, but you can't avoid reading it and listening to it with the background of Chet HaMeraglim, which we just read about extensively in the Parsha, especially because we're talking 78 psukim. And then here's another half a dozen psukim about this topic, another six about that. So it has to strike you. And another topic in the Parsha, which is not a mitzvah, but it's another story about the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the wood gatherer, who was a single individual who sinned, not by shogeg, but sinned intentionally and liable to the death penalty. And the only question was which death penalty that he was to get. And God clarified the issue and he was punished. So you have again communal sin and personal sin, communal chatat, personal chatat, and then every single person has to ask himself, and not just that generation, every single one of us has to ask ourselves the question, should I be doing this even though my rabbi didn't encourage me to do it? You know, whenever I get into arguments with people about that, could be a different topic. I remember arguing with some of my friends who smoked. Well, if Reb Moshe Feinstein would ask for smoking, I would stop. But obviously, if he doesn't smoking, there's nothing wrong with it. And they continued smoking. And responsible people said, I am convinced that it's forbidden to smoke because of the health hazard. And they stopped without the Gadol HaDor saying it's usur. I mean, that's old already because more and more came along on the way. But I'm just using it as an illustration. That's not an excuse. My Rebbe smokes. If it was really bad, I had a argument with a guy once, a storekeeper, Haredi guy in Mea Shearim many years ago, smoking while I'm trying to buy something from him. And I said, you know, I would respect your opinion more about which was the issue of tzitzis strings, which is part of the sedra anyway, which I should buy. He wanted to sell me a more expensive string that was twirled l'shem mitzvah by men, because the regular strings were done by, dare I say it, women. I said, I would take your word more if it weren't for that cigarette. I said, okay, don't get me started. I know I shouldn't be smoking. So why are you? And he said it with very seriousness. He said, I have a picture in my mind of my Zaidi sitting over a Gemara and learning. And I remember my Zaidi, and he was the biggest Talmud Chacham and the most worthy, righteous, Shomer Torah mitzvah person that I ever knew in my life. And he smoked. In fact, he has a photograph of his grandfather sitting over a Gemara with a cigarette in his between his fingers. He said, I can't get myself to believe that it would be forbidden. So I said, yeah, but that was in 19, you know, whatever. He said, no, don't tell me logic. It's not logic. I know it's not logic. I can't. Okay, so anyway, that's the thing. Here are the leaders. Now, again, Yehoshua and Kalev messed things up because it wasn't unanimous, but it still was 10 to 2 or 5 to 1 if you play ratios. So the Sedra concludes with a whole bunch of issues that go into the pondering and reckoning of what happens with Chet HaMeraglim. And again, I say, not just then, I believe there is no Chet that the Torah tells us about that is more alive and well today than Chet HaMeraglim. People say Chet HaEgel, so we don't worship a golden calf, but we worship a cell phone or social media. Okay, that's a way of, you know, of presenting the issue. But Chet HaMeraglim, you hear the Meraglim from other Jews. And I've said this many times, and I'm not directing this to those of you who don't live here, but I remember so powerfully two seminary girls from Muncie, New York, which I could say because Tirza is not on, who said to me, we have everything we need for a full Jewish life in Muncie. So why should we think of leaving? I said, what about Eretz Yisrael? What about it? I said, Shabbos? Yeah, we have that, Kashrut. Well, living in Eretz Yisrael, believe it or not, is one of the mitzvot in the Torah. It's either counted like it is by the Ramban or not counted for different reasons by the Rambam, but it's a mitzvah. No answer. Okay. If they had an answer, that would be something else. Can't leave my family. you know, whatever. Anyway, then the Sedra finishes with the third passage of Kriyat Shema, which includes the mitzvah of tzitzis, and also the prohibition of following the temptation of your mind or your heart. Lo tatur achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem asher atem zonim achreihem. Interesting, it talks about your heart and your eyes. And someone once put it very nicely. Your eyes are just the cameras that transmit what you see to your brain. So when the Torah says, Acharei levavechem v'acharei einechem, it's the same as saying after your heart and after your mind. Because eyes are nothing unless they're connected by optic nerves to the brain, and the brain is alert enough to understand what it's seeing. And basically that summarizes emotion on one side, intellect on the other side, and both have temptations. There are people who are tempted to do certain things or not do certain things for emotional reasons, and others for intellectual reasons. And the Torah forbids following one's temptation towards violation of Torah in either realm of emotion or intellect. So the three mitzvot in Shlach are challah and tzitzis and lo tatur acharei levavchem. But let me go back to now challah and tzitzis. Because what I told you before, what Chazal did to challah, that you shouldn't forget challah, even in Chutz Laretz, and Trumot and Masrot and Shemitah don't exist in Chutz Laretz. The only concern for Trumot and Masrot and Shemitah in Chutz Laretz is produce that's exported from Israel and imported in the United States. In fact, when somebody told me once they go out of their way to buy Israeli produce, because there's one fruit and vegetable place that actually carries Israeli products, produce I'm talking about, that's more problematic than buying it here. Because here you have certification on produce in the markets of Trumot and Masrot, and no chashash of Orla, and no problem with Chadash. And a lot of people who shouldn't be doing this, but they export stuff to other countries, and they have this attitude, well, they don't care. So, you know, if it's produce that grows in South Africa, then you don't have to worry about Shemitah and Trumot and Masrot and all of that stuff. But if it's Israeli produce, doesn't matter where in the world you're eating it, you have to be very careful.
Sorry, Phil. It froze for a minute. As you said that, I mean, I buy sometimes the miuchad, actually, if I see in the supermarket in Israel. I do masrot on it. I've got a coin, or they have a coin in Gateshead, and I've got a nusach to say. So was there anything more complicated than that to do that could be complicated?
First of all, the coin is not for Trumot and Masrot. It's for Maser Sheni,
whatever it is, yeah.
Which is in 4 out of the 7 years of a Shemitah cycle. It depends, because it's not just that. Let's take Orla as an example. There's a distinction between lelo cheshash Orla, without any possibility of it being Orla, or bechezkat, it's most likely not to be Orla. Now, what's interesting is on produce, now Orla is another example of a mitzvah that is agricultural mitzvah that belongs in Eretz Yisrael, that Chazal declared it should be observed in Chutz Laretz also. However, the rules of it are not as strict as they are here, which means if you're in the United States and you buy a can of peaches, stewed peaches by Del Monte, You can assume there's no orla problem because the likelihood is that there isn't a problem. It's not 100%, but it's most overwhelmingly probable. Here in Israel, it's a little bit more difficult than that. And that would apply to Israeli stuff that's imported, exported as well. It's complicated. And kalayim is another thing. Kalayim, you can't guarantee it unless you trust the hashkacha. So, for example, I don't know if it's actually done like this, but if there are grapevines, and you know that grapevines are trained above the ground with a lot of space underneath, and you might have some farmers who decide to use the space underneath to plant things. So there are some things you could plant, but there are many things that are forbidden to plant. You could plant flowers, for example. A farm in Israel can have a whole operation of non-edible flowers growing together with a grapevine. But vegetables, asur. And grain, asur. In our garden on the Mirpeset here, we had to realize the distinction. We had, for example, basil, or basil, do you say basil or basil?
Puzzle.
Growing, and we had to make sure it wasn't under the grapevine that we have. But what is it? Rosemary, with the woody stem, has a halacha of a tree, even though it's not tall. But it has the halach of a tree, which is not subject to kalai kerem. So that could grow in the same pots and the same things. Anyway, we could get off on this. It's too much. That's why there is a Torah V'Haaretz Institute, which has a very nice English department also, and has a lot of online guidelines for all of these things in a home garden and stuff like that. But the point. Okay, to continue the point. So I said what they did with challah was let's keep it alive, even though technically it could have fallen into disuse. With tzitzis, it's the same thing but different. Now, there is a phenomenon among many teenage boys, but that's really not fair to say. Like that, because it happens in adults also, who they buy into the idea that the Torah only commands me to put tzitzis on a four-cornered garment. So if I was wearing a poncho with four corners on it, I would put tzitzis on it. But my shirt and my pants and the clothes that I wear in the 21st century don't have four corners on them, which means, from the Torah's perspective, I'm not obligated to wear tzitzis. And they don't. Many men, I don't know how many, so I shouldn't say many, there are men who are generally religious, wear a tallis tallis every day when they daven. But they don't wear arba kanfos, the tzitzis on their bodies, because it's not a Torah obligation. Neither is a tallis, by the way. That's rabbinic also. In other words, what the rabbis did was require men to dafka get a four-cornered garment, which now requires tzitzis min haTorah. So it's not like it's derabbanan. But it's somewhere that needs explanation. It's like putting an asterisk and looking at a footnote. Essentially, the mitzvah of tzitzit from the Torah is a mitzvah kiyumit, meaning a mitzvah that I have the opportunity to fulfill if I meet the conditions, namely a four-cornered garment. And then the mitzvah can be performed by me. But unlike lulav and etrog, and unlike matzah, and unlike Hanukkah candles, where a person who is obligated on them and doesn't do them is doing an aveira, there is no aveira min haTorah if you don't wear tzitzis. And I know that I'm saying this to women here, but you should hear this also. However, the Rambam and the Tur Shulchan Aruch and the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Brura and zillions of other sources say that by rabbinic law, a person should not even walk four steps without tzitzis. The Tur Shulchan Aruch I saw yesterday says it like this. You should have your tzitzis near your bed. And when you wake up in the morning, if you have to go to the bathroom, put on your tzitzis without a bracha so that you will not be without your tzitzis in the daytime. You don't have to wear them when you sleep. But ad kedei kach, it went that way. So there's a dishonesty on the part of people, men, I'm talking about guys, who don't wear the talit katan. And I'm not talking now about wearing it outside the shirt or inside the shirt or tzitzis out or tzitzis in. These are all varieties that come later. The essential idea of wearing a talit katan all day long is rabbinic. It's more than rabbinic because it's the insistence of Chazal to force yourself into having that mitzvah, which is a Torah mitzvah. I don't know if that sounds normal. It's not like in our time, Maror at the Seder is only Derabbanan because we don't have Korban Pesach. That's not a Doraita. Even though we say Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al achilat maror, it's clearly a derabbanan. There are other things that are not clear. Is Sfirat Omer Doraita or derabbanan in our time? Machloket. But this is something different. Tzitzis on a four-cornered garment is a Doraita, a Torah law. Do you have to wear it by rabbinic decree or rabbinic teachings or rabbinic, I don't know what you want to call it. The answer is yes. And we go back to Devarim 17:11, which says, Al pi haTorah asher yorucha, according to the teachings which they will teach you, meaning Chazal, you shall do. So a person who says, well, it's not a Doraita, so I don't have to wear tzitzis. It is a Doraita in that, extra step direction of this is what Chazal said that we should do. And same discussion could go for head covering. Kippah is not Doraita. By the way, I remember watching a Talmud Torah kid go to the bathroom. When he was outside the bathroom at the sink, he took off his kippah, kissed it, put it down, went into the bathroom, came out, put the kippah back on, kissed it, put it back on, thinking that the kippah was a holy object that couldn't be taken into the bathroom. Guess what? You wear your tzitzis into the bathroom, and technically you could wear a tallis into the bathroom. Although the custom is to take it off when you go to the bathroom because it's easy. But nobody reaches in under his shirt to take off the talit katan in the bathroom. They're not kodesh intrinsically. Tefillin is another story. Here's a little trivia difference. If a person's in the middle of davening during the week, shacharit, let's say, with his talis and tefillin, and he has to go to the bathroom. Takes off his tallis, takes off his tefillin, goes to the bathroom. When he comes back, he puts on the tallis without another bracha, but he has to make new brachot on the tefillin. Because the break in the bathroom broke the continuity of the bracha for tefillin and the wearing of tefillin, since you're not allowed to wear them in the bathroom. They're kodesh. But the break in the wearing of the talis doesn't ruin the original bracha, because technically you're allowed to be in the bathroom with a talis and you just took it off for convenience or for a little bit extra respect. Side point, another side point, if a talis falls off a guy onto the floor without his realizing it, until it's already on the floor off his body, then he has to make a bracha. It's only when he takes the talis off with knowledge that he's going to be putting it back on that he doesn't have to. So, with challah and with tzitzis, meaning with food and clothing, there is a demonstrated attempt by Chazal to keep it alive more than it would be if it were just up to the word of the Torah without qualifying it. Because the messages that come from it, the message of challah, and here the message of tzitzis, the fact that it is part of our uniform. And by the way, I know women don't wear tzitzis. Women are exempt from tzitzis. And according to Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, meaning Rabbi Uziel, he was a Tana, it's also for a woman to wear a talis. Not everybody agrees with that, which is why you do find occasionally some women who will wear talis, in which case motive becomes an important issue. If it's a wannabe, equality kind of thing, we could do anything that a man can do. I don't think that's a great motive. But if it's a genuine kind of thing, then talis is possible. Tefillin is really not. Proof of which is that a boy trains for mitzvot from 3 years old, from 6 years old. Tefillin 1 month before bar mitzvah. Why? Because if you're not obligated to wear tefillin, it's not a smart thing to put on. Because the purity of your mind while you're wearing tefillin has to be very, very high. So what about us, the guys who have to wear tefillin? We have no choice. That's why Chazal shrunk the time of tefillin from all day long to half an hour to 45 minutes in the morning. And that's why many people, if they were to put on tefillin all day long, some people do, and you know that person, or you heard about that person, and you accept it. Yes, he's an exception. He could handle tefillin all day. But there are some people who put on tefillin all day that really shouldn't be wearing tefillin all day. And that's called yohara, which is rabbinic, which is religious arrogance. To say, yes, Chazal said we should do it only for shacharit, but I could handle it all day. It's not easy to handle all day. So that's sort of, my picture of Parshat Shlach, with separate topics, none of which have to be seen in light of the Meraglim, but they all somehow relate in some way. I wanted to mention one more thing about challah before I say we still have a couple of minutes. Challah on top of truma might raise an eyebrow. If I'm giving Kohen 2% on average of my produce, of my raw wheat, why do I also have to give him 1/24th of the dough that I need in order to bake bread? And the answer is that if you give raw wheat, which you're supposed to, truma, he's got to work. He's got to do it, or he has to send it to a mill and pay for it, and that's fine. But challah represents, I not only am giving this to the Kohen, but I am doing the work. Here is a wad of dough, and I'm not talking about the token pinch that we take today because it gets burned or buried or double bagged and discarded. I'm talking about when challah is actually given to a Kohen. I have a nice challah, which I took off. It's raw, it's dough. Put it into my freezer. 2 weeks later, a friend of mine comes and he's a Kohen. I go to the freezer, even lend him a freezer bag and one of those ice blocks, and I give it to him. And all he has to do is unwrap it and pop it in the oven, and he has a nice, fresh challah. So it's a service in addition to a gift. It's a service to the Kohen, one of the 24 gifts of the Kohuna, and we should see it in a positive sense and realize that when we take the token amount of challah today, only if you have a certain minimum amount of flour that you started with, then we're doing it just to remember this is a mitzvah. We make a bracha, and above a certain amount, and it becomes a it keeps Torat Challah alive. It keeps Tzitzis alive, and those are two very important reminders, especially Tzitzis, which is equivalent to all of the mitzvot. We say it in Shema. You'll see the tzitzit and you'll remember all of the mitzvot of the Torah, not just the mitzvah of tzitzit, but all of them. And one last point is that women, as I said, are exempt, but the concept of a Jewish uniform applies to women in the field of tzniut, and men have that rule also. My Zaidi, I didn't know this directly, but my mother used to say, always had three-quarter sleeves or rolled them up, but never past his elbow, because he felt that that was not modest either for a man. So, whatever. Women, tzniut, and that involves a lot of things. Men, kippah, tzitzis, modest clothing, and these are things that are not just mitzvot that are performed, but mitzvot that become part of our daily behavior. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Thank you very much.
Bye, Judy.
Do you mind just elaborating a bit more on the vegetables situation? I didn't want to take away from the share. If I find avocados, it says made in Israel. They do have the Vat HaKashrut comes out sometimes with potatoes are, but then they usually have underneath it and something about oiler and whatever, which I don't usually read about. But I'm just saying I find
Potatoes,
avocados.
mostly fruits of the tree.
Sorry.
Don't know what to tell you. It needs a hashgacha, because I know that there are producers here in Israel that behave in a more makpid way for consumption in Israel, and they take the easy way out of just selling and exporting to a market that they don't think people care, which is wrong.
On the whole, they don't, because if somebody doesn't care, they're buying Israeli. But yeah, I should ask the people who run the I
Yeah,
forget
did
what it's
this
called.
come with some kind of certificate? It could have. I'd like to know.
But they won't know that Sainsbury's is selling whatever it's made in Israel. Because I remember talking to someone, they said, well, if it comes from Israel, then it will have been Truma's and Mysid and whatever. I said, you can't be sure. It just says made in Israel. So therefore, that's why I do whatever it is I do on the coin. I have a Nusach and they have the coin. I'm not quite sure how that worked, but whatever. I assumed I was doing the right thing, but you're saying I'm not necessarily now.
Well, do you take off from the produce also? A
Yeah, you have to take hundredths.
little more than a hundredth.
And there's a whole nusach to say.
Yeah,
I
and
can't
but
remember.
you don't make brachot because it's a suffix.
Yeah, it's not bracha.
Today we made a bracha on Trumot and Masrot because we took an apricot from our tree.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, born in, grown in Israel, yeah.
So we did it.
I've actually got a booklet. It says it's the Nusach is Yoter Me'echad Mimea Sheyesh Kan Harehu Truma Gedola.
You could say it in
So,
English also, by the way.
what?
You could also say it in English.
I like to say in Hebrew or Torah. I mean, I'm just saying, is that's the Nusach. So,
Where's the
sorry, are
check?
you suggesting it's not enough? And that I should find out if I buy stuff Israeli that there should be more to it that I could do
Where'd you
or
get that
avoid it.
from?
I forget what this is called. Keren HaMasros, Rabbi Kallendauer.
That's something from London, yes?
He's in Gateshead or
Okay.
Manchester. According to many Poskim, all Israeli products must have Trumas and Maaseros separated unless a reliable authority certifies that Trumas and Maaseros have been taken. So some of the vegetable shops that are run by Jews, they've done that already if they have. Trumas and Maaseros should be separated by an adult over bar, da, 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 and it shouldn't be done on Yontif. And it just tells you what to do. It doesn't give you the laws of it. So I understood from what you said that just because I kind something that says made in Israel, there may be more that should have been done because it wasn't done in Israel. Is that what you were suggesting?
Either way, that's why it's a suffix. So you say you do it anyway, you say the things, but you don't make a bracha.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But you, I thought, and you seem to indicate that I should avoid buying something Israeli anyway because I might be doing,
No, but
might be
I'm
over on.
saying is with people with an attitude of, no, this is fine because it's from Israel, it could be the opposite. It could be it's more problematic depending on who's exporting.
So, yeah, I got that. So is what I'm doing not enough, but okay? Or are
Sound,
you suggesting
sounds
it?
fine. Sounds fine. The only
You
thing that
said
I
something.
said is that you can't make a bracha because you don't know for sure.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. This is what I'd say if I happen to buy something Israeli, and I'd be miyuchad used to try and buy some Israeli, because then I'd get to say this. I hope that there
Very
was
good.
some
Very good.
lofty brachas that would come from it, or whatever.
Very
But
nice.
I thought I understood you said that there could be other things that weren't taken and therefore it shouldn't be eaten anyway because of, I don't know, Orla or whatever, all the things I don't necessarily understand from it, which I won't know because it just says produce of Israel.
Right. Okay. I'll look into it a little more.
Okay, thank you very much. But you're not going to know necessarily what Tesco or Sainsbury or Waitrose sell, just
What?
that it says made in terms of their fruit produce.
Who?
You, I'm saying, you won't necessarily know what ends up in Tesco, the
I
Mashal.
know, but I want to find out if I have old information or it's been changed since.
Okay, I really appreciate if you could do that, actually, and I'll try and find out from this end as well.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Shabbat shalom, everybody.
You too.
Thanks so
There is no
much. Bye.
everybody, it's you and me.
Just going to say, if there wasn't anybody. Okay, thanks anyway. Bye. Thanks.
Bye.